how you love and care for one another. Randy wanted me to read these words to you. In all the years, months, weeks, and days that we have been members here at this congregation, my mom, Jeanette Finch, never met a stranger. She loved everyone equally well. Thank you all for your cards, thoughts, and prayers at this difficult time. And Judy Cunningham, thank you for the food that was prepared for my family in the fellowship hall. Christian love, Randy. To see how you care for one another and how you pick up one another and how you have rallied around Randy is a beautiful thing to behold. And also, today is a special day. We celebrate the 50th anniversary, wedding anniversary, of Bobby and Joe Bates. Justin, would you take this? Would you stand, Bobby and Joe? Let's see if we can. Right here, okay? Would you stand? Let me embarrass you just a minute. Bobby and Joe, we want to thank you on behalf of the elders and all the members of this congregation for loving one another, for putting the Lord first in your life and at the head of your home, and for showing us how to have a love that lasts 50 years and beyond. We're proud of both of you. Thank you. Let me ask you this question. Did you eat anything last month? Did you eat anything last week? How about yesterday? How about today? You planning on having lunch? You say, well, if the sermon's not too long, maybe we'll. What about tomorrow? Do you have a plan to eat something tomorrow? Somebody says, hey, at least three times, maybe four. I might have a midnight snack. Yeah, our plan is to eat something tomorrow. We don't like to miss a meal. I know Bill Dooley doesn't like to miss a meal. And I don't like to miss a meal. And he's always looking out for me, and I need to look out for him more often. Bill, we enjoyed the breakfast yesterday morning. And I understand that you're about to go on a cruise tomorrow. The Parkers and some others are going along with you. The Noblets. And we're trying to fit more people in the van, Parker's van. They tell me the food is fabulous on a cruise. We don't like to miss a meal. And if we do miss a meal, just listen, we'll tell you about it. You know, we'll say, I worked so hard yesterday, I didn't even have time to eat lunch. And if you didn't hear it, we're like, hey, did you hear me? I said, I worked so hard yesterday, I didn't have time to eat lunch. We want people to know we sacrificed, right? But listen to this. What about feeding our spiritual man? Do you have a plan to feed your spiritual man tomorrow? I mean, in other words, is it on your planner tomorrow? Have you done your shopping last week to purchase the things you needed in order to feed yourself spiritually tomorrow? You say, well, wait a minute. There's a large gap here between the planning and the purpose of feeding my physical man and my spiritual man. There really is. Zig Ziglar said, from your neck down, a man that's worth $100. Now, his monetary figure is old because his illustration is quite old, but his point is right on target. He said, from the head up, from the neck up, priceless. Now, if I could take his illustration and go just one step deeper with it, if you don't mind. What about your heart? What about your soul? What about your spirit, your spiritual man? That part of you that will never die. That part of you that is eternal. That part of you, to borrow from the credit card commercial, that is priceless. How much thought goes into feeding that part of us? Or are we, like Ronnie was talking about, just leaning upon luck? Now, consider that physical man, he gets hungry. And when he's hungry, there's an empty place in our stomach. And you say, hey, when I get hungry, he gets angry. And so he growls at me, right? You know what he does. He'll get your attention. He won't let me rest until I feed him. But what about this? What if our head and our heart would growl at us and wouldn't let us rest until we fed it? So I have a beatitude for you. Blessed are they whose head and heart will not let them rest until they feed it. Would you stand together and let's read together with Trey, Matthew 5, verse number 6. Trey, come and read the scripture for us.
Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled.
You may be seated with thanks, Trey, for reading scripture. See, it helps kind of get it into our mind. What are we talking about this morning? America is involved in a pursuit of happiness. Now, that's found in some of the founding documents of our nation. We've been after this for a long time, the pursuit of happiness, but nothing quite like this decade. You say, can you prove it? Well, how many books do you think are written last year, 2008, on the topic of happiness? 4,000 were published last year on the topic of happiness. How many books were published in 2000, just a few years ago, on the topic of happiness? There were 50. As a matter of fact, the number one course, the most popular course at Harvard University, is a course entitled Positive Psychology. You know what that is? That's happiness. How to be happy. Number one course at Harvard. And not just at Harvard, but 100 other universities across our nation offers the same course. Might vary slightly in content, but it's the same course, how to be happy. You don't even have to go to college to get it. There's seminars all across our nation. And there's now what's called life coaches. If you have the money, you can hire a life coach to help you be happy, to bring balance into your life. In the realm of psychology, the realm of psychiatry, now they're saying if only we could elevate the thought and the research and the development and ways and means of wellness, mental wellness, like we have mental illness, we'd be further along in where we need to be. And when you factor in all that's going on in neuroscience and you factor all that's going in on behavioral economists and you bring in the homespun remedies and those who just talk around the table and the gurus, you have people selling books and seminars and classes on how to be happy. And they're saying to you one thing, satisfaction guaranteed. If you read my book, you come to my seminar, you attend my class, we'll show you how not to worry anymore. You won't have any more anxiety and all of these problems. America is in a pursuit of happiness. But Jesus says it's the wrong pursuit. And that's the problem. He says the pursuit is for righteousness. And that is the last place we want to turn in finding happiness. He says it's the only place you can turn for happiness. Do you believe him? Look at it like this. Down through the annals of time, man has searched for satisfaction. Mankind. He has looked at the end of the rainbow of pleasure. The wisest man who ever lived, mortal man other than the Lord, I suppose, may have been Solomon, the preacher of Ecclesiastes. He said in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 8, he said, this is all wearisome. He said, man cannot tell it. He said, the eye is not satisfied. Not going to find it at the end of the rainbow of pleasure. There was a boy, and the Lord told about the two sons, the younger son who came to his father and wanted all of his inheritance. Oh, he's coming in his pride, you know, and his arrogance. And father, give me that portion of goods that falls to me. And you know the story so well out of Luke 15, verse 11 and following. He went out and he wasted all of the material wealth that was given to him. He thought he could buy friendship. He thought he could find it at the end of the rainbow of pleasure. But it was fleeting and it was gone. And then everyone had deserted him. And now he's starving to death and he's in the pig pen of life. And he's trying to feed himself on the husk that the swine, the pig would eat. Just the leftovers, not the real food. He's starving to death physically, sure. But really, spiritually. And he comes to himself. You know what happened when he came to himself? He became poor in spirit. And from that position, right there in that pig pen, he looks up. and he mourns over his sins. And with a meek and gentle spirit, he gets up. And in his humility, he makes his way back to his father. He has a hungering and a thirsting for his father, to be made right with his father, for all things to be aligned with his father. And that's the only thing that will satisfy him. And when he comes to his father fills him up. Notice his position with his father. He would have been just a beggar. He would have been just a servant, a hired hand. He doesn't deserve anything. I'm bankrupt in the presence of my father. But his father fills him completely. And that's what he'll do for you. But listen, only the Father can satisfy that hunger that is within you. And man has made this mistake throughout the annals of time. Only the Father can satisfy that hunger. Man goes out and he searches in the realm of performance, and he says, if I can just learn more and be more proficient and do more and work harder, hey, I'm going to find happiness and satisfaction. And again, the wise man says in Ecclesiastes 4:8, he said, there was a certain man. He had no dependents. He had no son, no brother. And he said his labor was without end. In other words, his nose was to the grindstone. He deprived himself of pleasure. He worked, and he got to the end of all that. And his eye was not satisfied with his riches. And he never stopped to think, who am I working for? Who am I going to leave all these things to? Someone who never worked for it, doesn't earn it? Am I going to leave it for the government? He's saying, what have I done? I'm not satisfied. I didn't find happiness in performance. It's not found in performance. It's found in purpose. The Father's purpose for our life. It's not going to be found in pleasure. It's going to be found in a person, and that's Jesus Christ. And it's going to be found in relationship, right relationship with his Father. And it's going to be found in communion with the Holy Spirit of God. That's where it's going to be found. But we keep looking in the realm of possessions, and I say, hey, surely it will be if we accumulate enough things. And again, Ecclesiastes 5:10, he says, a man who loves money is never satisfied with money. It's never enough. Psalm 37:4, he said, put your delight in the Lord. He'll give you the desires of your heart. So you see, we're on this pursuit. All we find happiness, well, we go shopping, a shopping spree. All that doesn't satisfy. So we go on a wife swapping spree. Oh, we don't find it there. On and on it goes. See, it's the wrong pursuit. He didn't say, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after happiness, but righteousness. And that's the last place we want to look, the last place we want to turn. We're like the patient who has pain, and we take the medication for the pain. And then we have to take a little stronger medication for the pain. And then a little stronger medication for the pain. And we're still taking the medicine for the pain, for the pain. But what we really need is a cure for the disease that's causing the pain. But in our pain, we'll look to everyone and everything and take every class and read every book instead of just turning to Him and His way. So you say, well, how then can we have lasting satisfaction guaranteed? Is there a place, is there a person that we can turn to? And there is. Once again, good news is found in the good news. It really is. It's not just a preacher's sermon. It's reality. For those who will listen, listen to the Lord. You got to know, first of all, what the real hunger is. Number one, in applying this to your life and to mine, we have to know what the real hunger is. Are you with me? Paul told us to those great thinkers in Athens, there at Mars Hill, when he stood there with all the thinkers of the day, he answered that question. Acts 17:27, he said, seek the Lord. If perhaps they might grope after him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. For it's in him we live, we move, and we have our very being, or we exist, or we are. He said, even your own poets have said this. We are his, capital H-I-S, offspring. We're the offspring of God. We have a spirit And that spirit always is looking up, always reaching up for God, because that's the only place of satisfaction. Study any civilization, and you're going to find man as the upward reaching or looking one. It's only to be found in God. He says, blessed are they that hunger and thirst. It's the most powerful of those drives in the natural realm that he's talking about. I think it's best illustrated like this. There's a guy named Major Gilbert, World War I, long time ago. They were involved in the battle to liberate Palestine. They were fighting from Beersheba up to Sharia or Sharia. They were out on that desert like David was talking about a few moments ago, and just like Justin was singing about. They were out on a desert, an arid desert. There's the blazing sun overhead. They're being blinded because of the glare, and there were their parched lips and swollen tongue and cotton mouth. And men were dying. They were dropping out. The vultures were flying overhead, ready to devour the bodies. Those who were left behind in the desert, never seen again. And they said they kept fighting. You know why? They had out-marched their wagon, their camel water trains. They were without water. But over at Sharia, there was water. There were the cisterns of cold, clear water. And so they fought for their lives to get to Sharia. And when they got there, they saw those cisterns full of cold, clear water. They had to line up the wounded first, then the guards who would watch over them while they were getting their water, and then company by company, they would receive water. It took 4 hours for the last man to get a drink of that cold, clear, life-giving water. Can you imagine standing there for 4 hours? Major Gilbert said, on that day, I learned my first real Bible lesson about hungering and thirsting. He said, if only I had that kind of hunger and that kind of thirst for the righteousness of God, for God himself and a right relationship with him. He said, the fruit of the Spirit would be magnificent in my life. So it would be if that were our hunger and our thirst. You have to know what the true hunger is and the true food. What is the real food? God offers us vegetables. We want dessert. But our thinking is all fouled up because the life is in the vegetables. The life is what he can give us. The energy he can give us. The abundant life he can give us. But we get all confused. We become so shallow. We're like the guy who swallowed the goldfish. And he's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you know how many goldfish he swallowed, Justin? 501 goldfish. And you know what the award was? A large aquarium. That's it. We're like the bush over the fern over in Australia. You know that fern? No value to it as far as food. No vitamins, no nutrients. It'll kill you if you eat it, but they say you sure feel full. And that's what we're about. We don't want to believe that, but we are. That's what we're about. Taking in that which can only destroy us. I'll bet you Michael Phelps wishes 1,000 times he had not hung around with the people he was hanging around with. Look what it's cost him. I don't want to go into the take the time to describe all that it has cost him, that decision to take that drug. Look what it's cost him. Look what it's cost him in the eyes of those that look up to him. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, evil companions corrupt good morals. There's people who will try to get us to eat the junk food of life rather than what really will give life. Isaiah said in Isaiah 55, verse 2, he said, why do you spend your money on that which is not bread and your wages on that which will not satisfy? He said, listen to me. He said, eat that which is good and that which is in abundance. He says, incline your ear. Come to me. Listen that you might have life. And in verse 6, he said, seek the Lord while he may be found. Draw near to him while he is near. He wants to give you life. This book, from God's mind, he knows what we're tempted to do. Be satisfied with less than the best. And he knows it'll kill us, just like that fern in Australia. It may look like it's good for food, but it'll kill you. You have to know what the true food is and what really satisfies. Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. Bread is a sustenance of life, always has been, some form or the other. John 6:35, you eat that bread, you'll never be hungry again. Not in that sense. If we keep on, the Greek language here is in keep on hungering, keep on thirsting. It's not that we arrive. He says, I'm the water of life, John 4:13-14. You drink that water, you never thirst again. Where's true satisfaction to be found? Aristotle had a student, and he wanted to have the wisdom of his great teacher. And he said, teacher, I want the wisdom that you have. Aristotle said, do you really want that wisdom? He said, I want that wisdom. He said, follow me wherever I go, will you? He said, I will. I'll follow you everywhere. He began to lead him. And Aristotle walked right into a deep pond of water, all the way up to his chest. The student would not follow him. He said, you must follow me. Finally, he coaxed him into the water. And Aristotle grabbed him by the neck and he thrust him under the water and he held him under there for a long time. When he finally brought him back up, the student was gasping for air and just frailing and flailing about, and he was trying to get his breath. And when the teacher got him calmed down, he said, now when I brought you up from under the water, what did you want? He said, air. Good answer. What else did you want? Nothing. A man who's dying of thirst, he wants water. Dying of hunger, he wants food. He doesn't want food and a new car. Yeah, no. Water, food, air. It's simple. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying. Do you hunger and thirst for righteousness? The Greek word means to be made right with God. It certainly begins with salvation. It doesn't end there, but it begins with salvation. You come to Him, you empty yourself. As a penitent believer, you are buried with Christ in a grave. In other words, you are crucified with Christ. You die. That's required. No options. You have to die in order to live, be born again. And then it continues on in sanctification. It continues on in setting your life apart from this world. You hunger and you thirst, not for worldliness, but for righteousness. And in the Greek language, the definite article is there, the. What it means is all of the righteousness. You're looking at a perfection. It's found in the aim. It's found in the direction. You say, what is a perfect farm? Is a perfect farm one without any weeds? No. It's one where the fruit is coming forth from the vines or the vegetables from the plants. You say, what is a perfect page? Is it one without any words? No, it's like Brianna Dean taking her songwriting gift and writing a magnificent song. And then a composer uses his or her gift to put music to it, and that makes a magnificent song, melody in our hearts. What is perfect communication? Is it one without any disagreement? No, it's that which comes forth that is honest and open. He says, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. He's given direction to our life. This is our aim. There are three stages of life, it seems to me. Number one, when you come to realize your need, or you come to realize that you want God in your life. Number two is when you come to realize your need for God in your life. But number three, the third stage, is this one Jesus is talking about. When you come to realize you have to have God in your life. No one else or nothing else will satisfy. Where are you today? Are you there? At that stage in your life? Are you hungering and thirsting? You want to be satisfied. John said in 1 John 2 verse 1, my little children, these things I write to you, that you sin not. Is that your aim? One man said, he said, I realized that wasn't my aim in life. He said, my aim was not to sin very much. And then he said this. He said, think about an officer or a military man, a soldier, and he's going into battle. Is his aim not to be hit by the bullets very much? Is that his aim? Just every 10th bullet will hit me. That's my goal. 1 out of 10. Or every 100th bullet will hit me. No, that's not his aim. His aim is not to sin at all. The Lord is saying, I want you to hunger and thirst like this. Do you have a hunger and a thirst? There's an empty place inside. Will you come this morning and let him fill it up? Justin, will you lead us? Let's stand together and sing this song.
Have you a heart that's weary?